I always try to pray a little bit about what I need to talk about. Well, when I'm doing anything, really, from the Word of God, unless I'm directly told, obviously. And powerfully, really felt I needed to talk this morning about encountering God. And I'm the sort of person, as most of you are probably getting to know, where I have the creative idea before the spiritual one. Sorry. But this time, I categorically knew what verse I wanted us to be looking at and delving into a little bit this morning. And it was the verse that Sarah read just earlier. Deuteronomy 4:29. If you seek the Lord your God, you will find him. If you seek him with all your heart and all your soul. Now, I do love this verse for several reasons. The really unspiritual reason is that I used to try and think of ways to make kids memorise Bible verses. So in my inimitable style, being a bit of a rock chick, secret one, I'd find a rock song and fit the words of the verse to the rock song that the kids would sing for a whole term. Now, John Davis, I'm really sorry, mate. You're going to die here, love. But we set Deuteronomy 4:29 to Europe's final countdown. If you look, you will find it with all your heart and with all your soul. It's your challenge. Try it this week. If you look, okay? And it became one of our most popular. And I had loads of people on team who were young adults that weren't Christians, and they'd go to a disco, a clubbing, sorry, not discos anymore, and Europe would come on, and they'd be belting out Deuteronomy 4 verse 29, which I quite like the idea of. That's epic. But one of the other reasons that I love this verse, and actually it's not the only verse in the Bible, but it tells us very clearly that we can encounter God. We can encounter God. This verse is almost like the key, if you like. It gives us all we need to know to encounter him. What does it tell us? It tells us God is here. He is right here with us. He's just waiting for us. He's going, seek me and I'm here. You'll find me. It's saying, I want to engage you. I think many Christians, myself included on times, forget that, which is why we become quite dry and quite stale. But he wants to engage us. He wants to encounter us. Look at the verse. If you seek the Lord your God, you will find him. And this bit I love. The fact that he wants an encounter with us tells us a major principle about our God, which we probably know, but do we know? He wants a personal connection. He's a personal God that wants relationship with us. He is a God in this verse who is literally going, I'm waiting for you, guys. I'm waiting. Just stop, turn, look and find me. Stop, turn, look and find. It's like the Green Cross code bit, sorry. But it's helpful, isn't it? Stop, turn, look and find. And you will find me. In the New Wine, the guy speaking in the mornings, a guy called John Mark Comer, he was amazing. I really liked him. From some church in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. And he was essentially talking about the spiritual disciplines. But one of his main points is spiritual disciplines are pointless unless you get that God is a personal God. Because you use the disciplines in order to have a personal relationship with him. We need to know that he's a personal God to encounter him, because then we will look for him. I just want us to pause there, because does that not blow you away? Probably for us in the West, it doesn't, okay? Because I think we get it a bit easy. And a video later on in the talk will hopefully make us go, ooh, yeah, okay. But it should blow us away that the living God who made our world wants to encounter us. No matter what you've done, what you're doing, where you're going, he wants to encounter us any time we want. You see, lots of people say, yeah, but I want God just to do it. I've said that on several occasions. God, just do it. But that's nonsensical if he's a personal God, because in personal relationships, they're always a two-way thing. If we want to encounter God, we have to do something. And this Bible says we have to seek. So why is it then that so many Christians, particularly in the West, I think, not all, but many of us, go through our Christian lives as if we've never encountered the living God? If you are sat here this morning and you call yourself a Christian, you have encountered the living God. Otherwise, you wouldn't have made that commitment. So why do our lives often not look like we've encountered him? Well, the guy in New Wine, John Mark Comer, said it immeasurably. Can we put the next slide up, please? It's a phenomenal quote. He goes, do we simply love an ideal and show loyalty to a mere principle? Is that what our faith is? Let me say that again so you can digest it, okay? Is our faith simply about loving an ideal that we're passionate about, perhaps, we properly believe, and showing loyalty to a mere principle? If our faith is doing that, as well-intentioned as that is, we will never be vibrant God changers in our world. Because what we need is an encounter. And not a one-off, wham-bam, thank you, ma'am. It's a proper encounter whenever we want, Deuteronomy says. So where do we start then? If you're sat there going, all right, I want to encounter God, but perhaps my faith is like loving an ideal and being loyal to a principle. So how do I change that? Well, it starts with knowing God. Knowing the God that you've signed your life up to. Up on the screen, you'll see there are many verses in the Bible, because what Deuteronomy says is repeated, I don't know how many times. Seek God, ask, seek, knock, you will find. From the Old to the New Testament. And there's another one up there. But the starting point is know God. We can lose sight of God. Life happens, but we can lose sight. And then we forget who he is. And then that has an effect on how we live. Let me give you a little bit of background on Deuteronomy. So in Deuteronomy 4, where that verse, look for God with all your heart and soul, comes, Moses is in a conversation with the Israelites, okay? And he's basically telling them, guys, come on, man. Let's get going here, is it? And they're grumbling and mumbling. And if you've read the Bible or heard it preached before, we know the Israelites grumble a lot. So what does he say in chapter 4 in Deuteronomy? So first of all, he's saying, guys, come on, obey. Now, it's another do thing, which if we're exhausted, might make us want to just sigh, okay? But bear with, okay? We're going to get there. He calls us to obey. Then, in verses 3 to 4 of chapter 4, he reminds them what happens when they worship this Baal. Now, I really can't say the name, but it's up there. Hazard a try yourself, if you like. They end up worshipping a Baal. Now, when I read the Old Testament, I don't get why the Israelites worship a Baal, which is normally a statue made of stone, wood, or bronze, or gold, or something. Why would you do that? But then if you compare that to us, what are our Baals? We all have them. If you've been a Christian not long enough, you know that they will exist and be there. What are they? ambition, family, health, money. What are they? All those things on their own are not wrong, okay? But if they become what we always look at, what we always worship, they become what defines us, and God gets lost. And Moses is saying, remember what happened with the Baal. As it happened, half of them got wiped out. Not that's going to happen to us. Verse 6, observe the laws. The older I get in my faith, I guess, I just get overwhelmed by how much God gives us to make it possible, to make faith and living it every day viable. And the Israelites are the same. They were like, oh, right, okay, this is my language, not the Bible's. Well, how do we do it? How do we live? How do we encounter? Well, obey the laws. Let me give you 10 of them up a mountain on 2 stone tablets. Observe the laws. And then, and I love this one, verse 9. Don't forget what you have seen. Don't forget what you have seen. Now, myself, along with other Christian friends of mine, have often said, if God would just do something, wow, that would sort it for me. The Israelites, let's just work out what they saw. First of all, they're rescued from slavery in Egypt with 10 fairly significant plagues. And then they escape. Then they get to the Red Sea with an army that's now changed their mind, chasing them. What does God do? Opens the sea so they can walk right through. They get to a desert. They're starving. What does God do? Desert, no food, no water. Sends it from the sky and makes water come from a rock. Still doesn't cut it for them. Because by the end of chapter 4, he's still going, guys, seek him. Which might be a small little indicator to us that God may do something amazing. And I love it when God does. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it will push us to encounter him or go deeper. Twice he tells them to teach your children. Why? These are my guesses. I think he says, teach your children everything you've learnt, everything you've seen, everything you know, so that another generation doesn't end up where you guys are. Then he says again, don't make idols. This time he specifies in verse 24, stars, moon, nothing. Don't make idols. All they do is take your attention away from here and moves it here, and it's a disaster. And then he says, as we've heard in 29, seek him with all your heart. Because in verse 31, he's a merciful God. Moses is going, come on, guys, know him. Know him. Know God, and your encounters could be regular, life-changing, life-defining. On the next slide, I found this image where I quite liked it. I was like, ooh, this is great, because the whole idea of a letter, probably our day's email. But he longs to encounter you. That is what Deuteronomy says. We, though, have to seek him with all our hearts, with all our souls. And that same sentiment is echoed throughout the Bible. All of this really hinges on one issue. How do you perceive God? How do we perceive God? If I was to say the word God, what would immediately come to your minds? I know that Dave was reading Tozer on his sabbatical. Tozer was something that my pastor as a teenager, it became our bread and butter. So in preparing for this morning, I dug out Pursuit of God again, and I was reminded of this insane quote, which will come up on screen. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Is that a bit of a sucker punch to the gut a bit? What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Tozer explains it's because we become like what we worship. So I decided to do a bit of a social experiment on social media. I know that some people are not fans of Facebook, so I apologise here. But I put a post on Facebook saying, what first comes to your mind when I say God? And I encouraged friends of faith, friends of no faith, to respond. And I felt super popular because there were like 32 comments. It was mega. And there were people who were people that I know from my childhood or youth talking to people that I know now, vying back and forth in conversation over this one question. Just as a slight aside here, I think that's an amazing sign for the Big Tent event, because I do believe that people are seeking. I do believe that the harvest is plentiful. But anyway, that's an aside. So, loads of different people responded, and I mean loads, okay? So I put some up on the screen for you to have a look at. I'm not going to read them all, but they are fascinating. And if what Tozer tells us is true, then this is the top, very top one, right? So there, this young woman, she started off as a child. She was 9, coming to a community drama group I run. Ended up as an adult, coming back to help in my community children's groups. Not a Christian at all. Her response, Father, love, inspired. I love an old school friend of mine. Bless her. She was embarrassed after she posted it. An archaic means of controlling the masses, the poor, to maintain a social, political, gender or superiority. An idea of good that hasn't been able to quite move with the times. And then she went, oh, Tommy DeGaulle. I just love their honesty. Worked with teachers all my ministry life, really. And a retired one who has absolutely no faith says, someone who looks after you and you can trust with all your thoughts. It is fascinating. How you perceive God will determine what your faith looks like and whether you can or are encountering him. If you're a friend of mine on Facebook, have a look at the feed. It is brilliant. But my favourite response, which feeds into what we're talking about this morning, was from our very own Hilary Ashton. I've asked her permission to put it up. If we could have it on the screen, guys. This is what she says. God as an entity can be divisive. You think Greek gods, pagan gods, etc. But put a my in front and it becomes a whole centre for my life. My God is powerful. My God is gracious. My God is forgiving. My God is almighty. Isn't that powerful? He is a personal God who wants to encounter us whenever we want it. We just have to seek. How do you perceive God? You need to get to know him. So then you think, okay, I want to get to know him, but then how can I? Well, Deuteronomy tells us, seek him. Look for him with all your heart and with all your soul. Now, I have got a fairly trite illustration here, okay? So please bear with me. But it illustrates the point of seeking, okay? Now, I'm not particularly girly, but I love shoes. And at the start of the summer, Sally Davis, our very own Sally Davis, was started coming to church in the most amazing patent red Birkenstock sandals. I was like, oh my days, I want a pair of those shoes, okay? So, I start to seek, okay? I love shoes, okay? This, it only makes sense if you get how much I enjoy shoes, right? So, I start to seek for shoes. And if you don't know what they are, there's a picture of them up on the screen. Men, I hope that's helpful. Okay, when Sally next wear them, you now will all be looking at her feet. So, I start to seek, okay? So, first of all, I hate shopping because I'm not girly. Go online. Brand new pair of those sandals is 50 quid. I'm like, I'm not paying that. So I'm like, right, what else can I do? How else can I seek? Oh, my mother and my sister, super girly, love shopping, shop a lot. And I'd remembered vaguely in the distant annals of my pre-shopping mind that TK Maxx used to have these sandals, right? So I messaged my mum and my sister. I say, guys, on your daily visits to TK Maxx, if you see these, would you mind picking me up a pair? Yes, yes. Well, despite the amount they shop, they had no success. I was determined. So I go on eBay. I'm not fussed about second-hand shoes, right? So as long as they look good. So I go on eBay. And twice, maybe three times, I found my size, exactly that colour, exactly that style. Placed my bid, because you need to know I wasn't going to pay more than a certain amount, right? Three times lost my bid. In fact, one bid came during a cafe church where I sat next to Jonathan Davis, who just thought I was a heathen, but there we go. And he said that he'd bought them. Interesting. So I waited a couple of weeks. I got tiny feet, right? So finding my size is not easy. So I kept seeking, until finally on eBay, I found these shoes, my size, and I won the bid at a pound under what I was prepared to pay as well. I was determined to have those shoes for a certain price. So I sought them out. Now, this is where it's trite. It illustrates, I hope, when we want something, we will seek it. We will seek it. That process with those shoes took about a month and a half. Seek it. And what is beautiful, okay, and this is another Tozer quote, and it is already on the screen. Faith enables our sense to function. Faith does. So if you're sat there thinking, oh man, I've got no oomph to seek, I've got none. The good news is, all you need is a bit of faith. And the even better news, my next slide please, is you don't need a huge dollop of it. The Bible says, faith the size of a mustard seed will do the job. Seek God. Then you will know him, and then you will encounter him. I was talking to Chris Burr last week, I think, and he said it was okay to share this story. The vicar in St. Denis, you all know Chris Burr, don't you? He often takes trips out to the Holy Land and does tours, so he knows quite a lot. And he was talking about this one trip he took out, and all of a sudden the bus driver pulled in next to a huge field of vibrant, fairly low-level bushes. They were healthy, growing. There were tons of them. And Chris was saying, he was looking at his watch, thinking, come on, mate, this isn't on the itinerary. Let's get on with it. The bus driver then proceeds to tell the bus that this vast field was a field of mustard trees. And Chris says, I was looking at it thinking, they're bushes, they're not trees. But apparently, that is how they grow. And he apparently says this to the bus driver, and he goes, oh no, mustard seeds aren't tall, mustard trees, they're fairly low level, they're just tall bushes really. But he said, look what happens from a seed tinier than that, planted in fertile ground, just look. And Chris said it transformed his idea of what faith the size of a mustard seed can achieve. We need to know God. And to do that, we need to seek him. And if the thought of seeking him makes us just want to sigh, the good news is a faith the size of a mustard seed is enough to start that process. I am aware that, you know, people get tired and life is not easy. And we could still be sat there going, I just can't. I just want God to do it. Let me give you some facts that you'll all probably know if you've been in church for a long time. He is omnipresent. So he's always there. He's always present. He's always near. Always. He holds everything in being. His power is ever present, is sustaining, and is governing all things. And his commitment is to stand by us always. Matthew 28:20, behold, I will be with you until the very end of the age. If you are flagging, if you are tired, if life is just drawing you away, he says, I am with you. And I am here. There is a but. He knows us. And there are seasons, because of our humanity, our sinful humanity, when we are neglectful of him. And he knows that they come. Where we give him no thought, we don't trust him, he's not manifest in our lives. And again, Tozer puts it so beautifully. I wish I could write like this guy. His face, the brightness of his personal character, is hidden behind the curtain of our carnal desires. All the stuff we want, like my shoes, block him out. Not that the shoes were wrong. I'm so glad I have them. But you understand what I'm saying, okay? All the things we say, family is important, it is God first. But work, we need to work, it's important, it is, but God first. But my health is a battle daily. Yes, it is, but God first. Because God knows we have a bent always to look this way and not that way, that is why he says, seek me. That is why he says, seek me. That is why we have to do something. And like I said earlier, the relationship is two-way always between us and God. Look at... Sorry. Colossians 3:1-2 says, if then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of the Father. Set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. We have to do the earth stuff, but set your mind up here. Look up. We have to see. Because we have to know him and then we encounter him. We have to seek because it's a two-way relationship. Spiritual disciplines are essential here. And I know that some of us find some of them easier than others. But God even gives us the tools to seek him and know him and encounter him. They're a training for holiness. And there are tons of them. But if you want to start the process of getting to know him and seeking him, we have to engage with these tools he's given. Now, the next slide only has a couple on it, okay? But it kickstarts us. Read the Bible. Pray. Meditate. Whack a worship song, a DVD on it, a CD rather, on in the car. Or if you've got Bluetooth, put it on with your phone. Go to church. Even if you hate it, go. Serve. Be obedient and submit. Spend time alone with him. Fast. We're given those tools for a reason. Like I said, God gives us everything we need to encounter him. Perhaps training for holiness is not a helpful analogy. Maybe a better way to say it is practice closeness. Facebook often has stories on it, and there's one that helps us understand this. Practice closeness. That's what the disciplines are. So this guy who's having an affair comes home to his wife, and before tea he says to her, I'm having an affair and I want a divorce. The wife is silent, and then turns around and says, okay, I will sign divorce papers. I will give you a divorce, but I'd ask you just one thing. In the next month, our son is having fairly significant exams. I'd ask you to stay for that month to give him stability. And I'd also ask you that every evening you would carry me from my front room up to my bed. Husband thinks this is odd. But he concedes that being around for a month for the sake of the son is valuable, so he agrees to the odd request. And so the ritual begins. To begin with, it is awkward carrying his wife upstairs. For a start, he hasn't been that physically close to her because he'd be physically close to another woman. It's odd. It's awkward. It doesn't feel right. It keeps carrying on. And as each day goes, as he comes and picks her up and carries her up to her bedroom, something starts to change. He starts to notice things about her physicality. She's lost a little weight. He remembers a smell. Her hair, her eyes, things he has not seen or chosen to see for a long time. They start to talk, and again, to begin with, that is awkward. It's monosyllabic, one sentences, but then conversation evolves where they start to share life. Talk about their days and their son, common ground. By the end of the 4 weeks, the husband realises he still loves his wife, doesn't want a divorce. Now, the end of the story is somewhat different, but we don't need to go to the end of the story, because what does that illustrate so powerfully? If we practice closeness with the tools we have been given, we will know our God and we will encounter him. I just want to show you a video before we pray and then go into our last songs. A very good friend of mine grew up in a Christian family, and when she was 17, somebody told her that she would be a missionary, which she held lightly. Ended up going to uni, and then God called her again and said, I want you to go to Turkey and be a missionary amongst Muslim Persians. I caught up with her over the summer and she showed me a video that I said, please, 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 can I show this in church? At the start I said, it's sometimes difficult for us because we can be complacent in the West. But when you see what an encounter with God has done for these people, it should be an adequate kick up the butt. Sorry. These people are in a Muslim nation where choosing God, choosing an encounter, a lifelong encounter with God, means that their families will reject them, means that death is a possibility. An encounter with God is life-changing, life-defining. So we need to seek him. Seek God. Know him. He is worth it. He is worth it for those people, nearly 200. Seek God, know him with all your heart and all your soul. There is a prayer on your chair. Take it home, read it as we sing worship, whatever. But if you want to commit to seeking God with all your heart and all your soul and encountering the living God, use it as a prayer this morning.